from two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska. This is The Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hi, everybody. This is Dorothy, the Five Sides mom, and this is November, and it's Epilepsy Awareness Month. And as many of my The Side Vibe listeners and Five Sides readers know, I highlight my Live Give Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness campaign, which is close to my heart as a result of my journey with my own woolly Siberian Husky, Gibson. To recap briefly for any of our new listeners, after emergency hospitalizations for grand mal and cluster seizures, my Gibson was diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy shortly after his third birthday in 2009. He was placed on AEDs, which is anti-epileptic drugs, as well as natural supplements. Gibson did have side effects from the medications, including weight gain, lethargy, and weak hind end issues that, under the direction of our veterinarian team, we combated along the way with nutrition, supplements, cold laser therapy. And Gibson was such an amazing dog and a true inspiration. He inspired two of my books on canine epilepsy, What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy, and that's a fun light book about epilepsy that's illustrated to make it for children so that they can learn about epilepsy and not be afraid if they see a dog or even a friend have a seizure. The other book is Epic Dog Tales, Heartfelt Stories about Amazing Dogs Living and Loving Life with Canine Epilepsy, and that contains 124 stories of dogs across the globe who have lived or are living with canine epilepsy and their stories as told by their families. It also includes a vast resource of information for anyone on this journey called Canine Epilepsy, and both of those books are available through my Arctic House Publishing, and that's ARCTICHousePublishing.com, the store there online, and they're also available through Amazon.com, and there are links right on the publishing site to get there through Amazon. Gibson was also a great inspiration to many others, showing that even with special needs, dogs can and do live happy lives. It really warms my heart receiving comments and emails about how much people admired Gibson and how much they learned from his journey. One of the most touching and recent Five Sides blog posts said that after following Gibson's journey, they would absolutely adopt a dog with canine epilepsy, and that's really great news to hear. Along the way, I have talked about what an amazing veterinarian team I have and the great care they gave to Gibson. Doctors Arnold Rugg and Beth Alden of Kingston Animal Hospital in Kingston, New York, have been Gibson's lead vets throughout his journey with epilepsy. The amazing, knowledgeable, and caring team at Kingston Animal Hospital has been tending to my family's pets for 3 decades, and they have all been so wonderful with my boy Gibson, as many of you have seen from photos and videos posted on my blog and Five Sides Facebook page. I'm really excited to have my Five Sides lead vet, Dr. Arnold Rugg, on today's show to talk about Gibson's inspirational journey in caring for dogs with canine epilepsy. And before I get into my introduction to give you guys a little bit of background on Dr. Rugg, I just want to mention if you go to thefivesides.blogspot.com, I also currently have information on 2 clinical studies that the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine Companion Animal Epilepsy Research Department is holding recruitments for. The first clinical study is the microbiota gut-brain axis in canine epilepsy, determining the role of lactobacilli. There is a flyer you can download there, as well as all the information on what you need to know to see if your dog can enroll in it. The second clinical study is the use of accelerometry to detect seizures in dogs with idiopathic epilepsy. And again, there's a link you can click on to download the flyer and find out all the specifics. And the person there that you'd want to talk to and get more information about or see if your dog qualifies is Julie Nedefe. And her information is also listed on the blog article, and you can also give her a call at 919-513-6812. That article with all that information is on my blog, and it is the November 1st post that will have all that information. As I stated earlier, I'm really excited about having Dr. Rugg on the show. I really don't know what I would have done without him and the wonderful life that I believe Gibson had as a result of his care. And just being able to consult with him and talk to him about various, practices and treatments, holistic as well as traditional, it was just such a great asset having him. And again, I know folks have heard me say this before, it's really, really important that you have a great relationship with your veterinarian when you have an epi dog. You need to be able to feel free to go to them, talk to them, have them understand your dog, and really be able to talk about the course of treatments, which can possibly change over the years. Dr. Rugg has been practicing veterinary medicine for 35 years. After graduating from New York University with a BA in classical civilization, he attended the University of Bologna Veterinary College in Bologna, Italy. Dr. Rugg completed his Educational Commission for Foreign Veterinary Graduates, ECFVG, internship at Iowa State University, and he practiced small animal medicine and surgery in Long Island and Rhode Island before founding the Kingston Animal Hospital in 1980. Dr. Rugg is past president of the Hudson Valley Veterinary Medical Society. He is an affiliate member of the American Animal Hospital Association and the American Veterinary Society, as well as the New York State Veterinary Medical Society. In addition to being the director of the Kingston Animal Hospital, Dr. Rugg maintains his interest in small animal medicine and surgery through practice and continuing education. He has been active in founding and supporting the Animal Emergency Clinic of the Hudson Valley in Kingston. Dr. Rugg and his wife, Elaine, have three grown children and are the proud grandparents. He also has a German Shepherd, Yogi, and a pug, Tulip, and you'll see them around his office. They are spoiled and treated as family members by him and his family, and he expects his patients to be treated with the quality of care and affection he gives his own pets. Hi, Dr. Rugg, and welcome, and thank you for being a guest on the Side Vibe. My first question is, when a dog comes in for seizures, what do you look for initially?
So seizures are like a muscular, neuromuscular, episodic spasm that dogs or humans or cats or any other animals go through. And so the first thing you want to do when they come in, when the owner presents them, is get a good history. How old is the dog? Did it just start? What kind of food does he get? What kind of environment? Did anything predispose it? Was there any exposure to anything, like anything that could be toxic? Was there a change in food? All these questions can get you to zero in on what's the cause up to a point. So when, for example, if you have a really young dog and it has seizures after it eats, then that would indicate that it could be having a liver abnormality called a liver shunt. And that means that when the liver was formed in the embryo, it wasn't done correctly. The liver's job is to detoxify what's eaten. So after it goes from the intestine into the liver, instead of going through the liver and having all the toxins removed, they go directly into the blood, and then it goes up into the brain, causes an agitation that causes an abnormal. See, if you think about a seizure, it's the neurons or the nerve cells in the brain are either excitatory or inhibitory. That means when they're in normal state, they're at peace, so to speak. if the if the excitement is greater, then the animal can exhibit signs of a seizure. So if the animal is, if the inhibition of the nerve cells is greater, the animal can act as if it's in a stupor. So you have the seizure state, which is excitation, and you have the stupor state, which is inhibition. So so what happens in these liver shunt seizures is that there's an increase in the excitation, and the dog will either have a seizure or act like it's in a stupor after it eats, because the liver isn't processing the normal toxins out of the body. So if you have a young dog and you see that, the first thing you think of is a liver shunt. Other things, for example, if you have like a Chihuahua that's a puppy and it's having seizures, then you think that it, and often they'll have what's called an open fontanelle, just like a baby, and you'll feel the soft spot on their head. So a lot of times they'll have a condition called hydrocephalus, or water on the brain. That can cause seizures or stupor, depending. Like the dog will be like in a daze all the time. So those are genetic causes of seizures. Then you have poisons that can cause the nervous system to abnormally react, and that usually happens, and they don't just go through a seizure and then are normal. Most of the time they come in, they're really sick, they might be vomiting, and they have other symptoms, but you always have to rule out what's in the house, what they could have been exposed to, that sort of thing. That's important, and then a lot of times that will show up on a blood test. And for example, and now especially with marijuana becoming legal for medicinal and for other use, we see dogs coming in that have eaten their owner's marijuana, and they'll come in seizuring or in a stupor. So that's another external cause of seizures. Poisonings, insecticides, rat poison, you know, anything that they could get that will cause. So then the next thing is, so those things usually show up on a blood test, but or a urine test. But for example, with marijuana, it'll show up on a urine test that you get if you're testing, like they'll test people for drug use. If you do the urine test, you can see if the animal got into like a recreational drug, or even like heroin, that'll cause like a stupor or cause everything to shut down. That's really not opioids are more of a downer. They don't cause seizures as much as they would cause a coma or a stupor. But with marijuana, we will see. Or even I once had a chihuahua that ate a cigarette, and it came in seizuring from the nicotine. The nicotine can have both an excitatory and an inhibitory effect. So different poisons have to be questioned. And usually that's more of a one-time thing. Whereas the anatomic or hereditary causes of seizures are, you know, they don't go away. Usually they don't go away. Another thing is trauma. I mean, if a puppy or a dog gets hit in the head, you can have brain swelling and you can have bleeds, things of that nature. So that, and sometimes what's odd is if a puppy gets hit in the head and they seizure, then they can become epileptic for the rest of their life. And they don't really know why, but just once they get set in that direction, they will need to be treated for idiopathic epilepsy after that. So before I get into idiopathic, the other things that we do, so when a dog comes in and it's had a seizure, we get a description of the seizure, how frequently, how it started, The beginning of a seizure is called the aura, and that's if the dog will sense that it's coming, and they start to seek out the owner, they get worried, they pace, and then they have the actual. Sometimes you can almost talk them down by calming them down and such. Then they have the actual seizure, which is called the ictus, and that is usually lasts anywhere from 30 seconds to like 2 minutes. That's the common, idiopathic seizure. And then the post-ictal period is the period afterwards, and that can be from almost no time up until, a couple of days where the dog's just walking around in a daze and uncoordinated, just off. So that's part of the history. It's really important because toxicity doesn't work that way. Liver shunts doesn't work that way. Brain disorders don't usually work that way. There's not you don't have the pattern that you have, and the fact that it's almost happens sequentially. And then often very important in the history is whether there are bursts of seizures, which are more serious because they're more difficult to prevent. So they have, if the seizures persist or the dog keeps going into seizures, then it becomes a life-threatening situation. That's called status epilepticus, whereas the body temperature can become very high and the dog can sustain brain damage. So that's really, really an emergency. Most of the time a dog has a seizure, they're okay in a few minutes and then they should be seen if it's something new, but it's not an emergency at that time. Most of the time when people bring their pets in after they've had the experience of seeing them have a seizure, they're better by the time we see them. Mm-hmm. So we get the history, do a physical exam, and the physical exam is really important because when just the basic physical exam, you will listen to their heart. So if you listen to the heart and you find an abnormality, then you have to start going in that direction because the heart pumps the blood, and if the blood isn't being pumped to the brain at the normal volume, then they can have what's called syncope. Syncope is a fainting episode that can start and be seizure-like. The dog keels over and can go through some muscle movements and then passes out. You think that you may be afraid the dog is dead, and then then often they will just snap out of it, but they can die during that syncope or fainting episode, and that is due to a cardiac lack of oxygen to the brain. So that's very important in the physical exam. And so when you do that, the other parts of the physical exam, the routine physical exam is, you check all the symptoms, the systems. You go through, you examine the color of their mucous membranes, making sure that their gums are nice and pink, which indicates oxygen flow is normal. You check the lymph nodes. You're looking for whether there's an infection. You take their temperature. You look for whether there's fever. You check any signs of cancer, because all these things can affect the brain. When they affect the brain, they can cause seizures, and seizures are a symptom of a brain, an abnormality in the brain. So if you go through all that and everything looks normal, then the next thing that we do is, let's say it's the first seizure, and now the dog is acting normal, which is how it usually presents, then we do a blood test. And in the blood test, that helps assess what we can't see on the physical exam. And that's, whether there's changes in the liver, in the kidneys, in the electrolytes, which are the different salts that are necessary for cellular normalcy to keep the metabolism correct, the red blood cells, the white blood cells, the whole thing. If, for example, you have your dog has kidney disease, let's say it's a young dog, but it's you don't know why, but it started, it had a seizure, and it could be young, middle age, or old, and we get back the test, and the test says that the kidney values are elevated. So that's not typical of idiopathic epilepsy. That's typical of either, you know, some cause of kidney disease. Now, kidney disease, as the waste products build up in the blood, they have an they cause excitation of the neurons in the brain, so they can present with seizures. And that's not good, you know, because a lot of times it will indicate that there's something irreversible going on. So that's why it's really important to follow do blood tests and urine analysis to determine whether there's something metabolic in the animal that's causing the seizures. So then let's say everything is normal. The physical exam is normal. We look at the eyes. The eyes are normal. You look at the retina. The retina is normal. You see the pupillary light response, which is normal. We do a general neurologic exam, and the dog's responsive. Everything looks okay. The dog can walk fine. There's nothing that you find, but except the history with the description says that he's had a seizure, and then you have the description of a seizure, which is the stages that I stated. And so now it most likely you're dealing with a condition after you've ruled out all the blood tests and everything of idiopathic epilepsy, which is, they say about 30 to 40% of the dogs that have seizures have idiopathic epilepsy. Idiopathic means that you don't know what the cause of it is, but there's an abnormal firing of the neurons in the brain in which they become more excited, and and the dog has this neuromuscular seizure in which they fall over, and the front and back legs thrash sort of at the same time. That's grand mal seizure. And after they go through this shaking, while it's going on, they lose consciousness. A lot of times their pupils will be dilated, and they can relieve themselves. Sometimes they'll urinate or defecate, and then their jaws will clamp, and then just like it begins, it ends, usually between 30 seconds and 2 minutes. And then when they wake up, when they snap out of it, they're like, most of the time they're like in a daze. A very small percentage of the dogs can actually be aggressive. You have to be careful about that. We don't see it very often, but it's certainly something you have to be careful about. Until they really don't know what they're doing, so it's not their fault, but that's a form of epilepsy where they're in the post-ictal phase. They can act aggressive, so be careful about that. And then once the post-ictal phase is over, they just gradually come back to themselves. So that's pretty much the pattern that we see. So then... So that a good history, physical exam, blood test, and that sort of sets you in the direction that you need to go.
Great. Okay, thank you. That's excellent information. And as you were describing it, that's exactly what had happened with Gibson. In Gibson's case, he had grand mal and then a month later was rushed to the emergency clinic with cluster seizures. After he was stabilized and transferred here to your hospital, he was placed on AEDs, and that's anti-epileptic drugs, phenobarbital and potassium bromide to manage his seizures. What is it about the combination of these two particular medications that work well in managing seizures, or at least they managed Gibson well?
Yes, most of the time for idiopathic epilepsy, we start with phenobarbital because phenobarbital has a calming effect on the neurons. In other words, it increases the inhibition action of the neurons in the brain. And it, the good thing about it is it reaches a blood level very quickly. So in a few hours, it's starting to work. And so talking about phenobarbital, the first few days when the dog is on it, they will often act kind of dopey and act hungry, and sometimes they'll drink and eat more, and sometimes they'll have urinary accidents, but that usually subsides after the first 5 days. And a lot of people get really nervous because they think that the dog's getting worse, but that's really expected with phenobarbital. So it's really like the oldest and least expensive of the seizure medications. And the problem with phenobarbital is that you know, even though most dogs tolerate it, after a certain amount of time, a certain number of dogs will develop liver problems with phenobarbital. So what we do is we assess the liver values. When we do that first blood test, we get a starting point and then follow it along and see if it is causing liver problems. And sometimes it won't cause liver problems at all. Sometimes it'll, if it, let's say, for example, it's the only medication, sometimes with like little poodles or small dogs, it's the only medication that they'll need, and they'll get a very small amount, and that they'll live a normal life. They can live to be 15, 16 years old. And so you just monitor the phenobarbital level, and that means that once you start them on the phenobarbital, you take a blood test in a month, and they get what's called the therapeutic range of phenobarbital tells you if it's effective or whether you have to decrease it or increase the dosage. And some dogs, they do great just with that. Often, especially with big dogs, we don't get satisfactory control, or we get too much side effects, or we get liver problems with phenobarbital alone. So what we do in that case is the next drug that's handled very well is potassium bromide. The way potassium bromide works, it works on the cell membrane of the neurons, and it increases the secretion of inhibitory messengers, so that it has a different mechanism of action than phenobarbital. So that's what you try to do, is achieve a balance. Well, it's almost like a cocktail of medications that don't work the same way but work on different causes of the seizure. So this one works on the membrane, whereas the phenobarb works on the inhibitory cells. So, you know, inhibition itself, the other one works on the bromide, works on the membrane. So the difference with the bromide is that it takes a long time to, you know, probably a couple of weeks to get a blood level. So you don't get that immediate effect, but it's usually very safe, and is very, most of the time you don't see side effects unless you go with what's called a loading dose of potassium bromide, or they even have sodium bromide. So what you do is, and it comes, what's nice about bromide is it's like a once a day treatment, which is really convenient, whereas phenobarbital, usually it's twice a day because it lasts only 12 hours. The bromide takes a long time, and then if you stop it, takes a long time to get out of the system. So you do the same thing. You try to get blood levels, but it's it takes a few weeks. I used to do loading doses of bromide, but I stopped because I found that the that we got a lot of side effects. So mainly I will, in my clinical experience, it's just the way I do it, is I get them stabilized on the phenobarbital, and then I will add the bromide gradually over the next few weeks. Sometimes if you can't get them straightened out, you know, normal and seizure-free or mostly seizure-free with the pheno, and in the beginning I'll add like a Valium-like medication, which is a shorter-acting medication that is also used for seizures. You can use the different types of benzodiazepines, which are what Valium and Xanax and those different medications are. They're also effective for seizures. But the main ones that we use are potassium bromide and phenobarbital. Now there are, should I get into the new ones?
Sure.
Yeah, now there are newer ones that have come on the market. Some of them at one point were price-wise prohibitive, and most of these medications are human medications that we, you know, we write prescriptions for, but they're not made as veterinary drugs, but we're, you know, we can write prescriptions for them. If one is Neurontin and Keppra, zonisamide. So these are different ones. Like Keppra was very expensive, but now there are ways to get it for less expense. It's very safe, and also you have to do blood levels. And in some cases where you have dogs that aren't responding to the typical medications, these newer medications are effective. And so we have more weapons against the seizures. But I should say that, you know, there are, you know, I didn't mention that sometimes infectious diseases can cause seizures. Like in puppies, the most famous one is distemper. In older dogs, they can get meningitis and even different fungal infections that affect the nervous system. So those conditions, you know, those conditions sometimes require, you know, bacterial meningitis requires antibiotics. And there are different tests that they do, like cerebral spinal tap or EEGs, which is like an electric test. And if you have, if a dog is having a seizure and you do an EEG, you can, the neurologist can learn a lot about the nature of the seizure and sometimes the source of it. So that those kinds of things, usually if we're unable to control or it looks unusual or atypical, we will recommend that you take your pet to a veterinary neurologist, and a veterinary neurologist can has these more involved testing, for example, brain scans and MRIs. So if you have an older dog who starts to seizure for the first time, you have to be concerned that there might be a brain tumor. Now, a brain tumor is, you know, if they can see it on a scan or an MRI, it isn't necessarily a death sentence, because there are brain tumors that are outside the brain just putting pressure on. I've referred cats and occasionally dogs to neurologists where they operated on brain tumors that were pushing on the brain but not inside the brain doing damage, and these dogs after the surgery were back to normal. So if you can afford to go to the neurologist and have those tests done, then a lot of times, or a certain percentage of the time, the dog can be cured by surgery. So that's something that, you know, that we don't see that often because of the expense, but it's certainly true that all brain tumors are not malignant. And if you have an older dog with seizures, then you have to think about the brain tumor. And then if you can afford to go to a specialist, that's what we recommend.
Okay, so Gibson had full blood work done, and I had it done every 5 to 6 months. In any case, how important is it for EpiDogs on medication to have these blood work panels done up once or twice a year? And, you know, I know they check for things, you check for things as liver values, medication levels, and so on. What is it that you look for, and what would be a red flag?
Okay. So what we do is, the first thing we do is the levels of the drug and therapeutic levels of phenobarb or Keppra or, you know, potassium bromide. So the lab knows what the range is, and the dogs should be in that range. That means that the dosage of the drug is effective, is the effective dose, and that it's not getting overdosed or underdosed. So that's the first thing. Then the second thing is the regular blood panel to view whether the medication is causing problems or toxicities with the liver, with the kidneys. I should have said about potassium bromide. Potassium bromide works. Sometimes it'll upset their stomach, so you should give it with food. And if they have a lot of salt in their diet, the salt can replace the potassium, and then you won't get the effect. So a lot of times we'll get a blood level of potassium bromide that's too low, and then we review what the dog's diet is. If it's getting a lot of salty snacks, then it's not, the salt is replacing the bromide, and then it's not being effective. So that's really important to have that blood level and have the right diet. If they're getting sometimes people will be feeding them from the table with salty foods, and it counteracts the potassium bromide. So then we do the liver and the kidneys, and if they're getting overdosed with bromide, it affects the kidneys. If the liver is sensitive to the phenobarb, it affects the liver. And then if those things are going on and they're still in the therapeutic range, then you might have to consider one of the newer medications, because obviously you don't want the dog to have a liver or a kidney failure because of the medication. So that's why it's extremely important to have them checked. Well, sometimes people will have the medication and the dogs will start to become jaundiced from the effect of the phenobarbital, and then all of a sudden you have a crisis on your hands. So it's real important to stay on top of that.
If you're just tuning in, this is a Sidevibe on Dog Works Radio, and we are talking with Dr. Arnold Rugg, Medical Director and owner of Kingston Animal Hospital in Kingston, New York. You can check out Kingston Animal Hospital staff, services, pet health information, and videos over on their website at www.kingstonanimalhospital.com, as well as on their Facebook page of the same name. Links to these sites are also listed on our show's website at dogworksradio.com/the-5-5.com, and will be coming up soon in a blog post over on my 5sides.blogspot.com and on my 5sides Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews Facebook page. Also, please just check out the November 1st post over on 5sides blog, because I have some information on Epilepsy Awareness Month, as well as information on two clinical studies where they're holding a recruitment call for EpiDogs, and that's through the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. So be sure to check both of them out. There's flyers over there you can download with information and contact numbers as well. Now, I hear this a lot, through my 5sides Facebook page, and people send me notes that they want to hold off on medications, especially pheno, because of the fact that it can affect the liver. And I know it's pretty routine to hold off if a dog has just one seizure to kind of see if it's a one-time thing. But if they continue, isn't it important to treat the seizures to prevent other serious issues as a result of them?
Yeah, what we generally do is, if they have an occasional seizure and everything else is okay and they're short and they're not having clusters, let's say you know, to have a few seizures a year. So it's really important to have a calendar, write everything down. When I say write everything down, the date, describe the seizure, time it. A lot of times after you, it might seem like an eternity, but it's only like 90 seconds. So that's the things that the veterinarian really needs to know. And then if one seizure triggers into another seizure right away, or the seizures become more frequent, those are dangerous. So then they can be clusters, or they can go into that status epilepticus in which the body temperature goes up, and then the dog can die from brain damage, or tachycardia, really rapid heart rate that causes them to go into a fatal arrhythmia. We sometimes see that with greyhounds, which they'll have a high temperature and then they'll go into a seizure. It's not necessarily from epilepsy, and then they will die. So this, it's not to be taken lightly. A lot of times the medication, you know, most of the time we don't have the problems that we're describing. So a lot of people are afraid to start their animals on medication. But I think when they have cluster seizures, or when they have status epilepticus, or when the seizures just start happening, you know, more than once a month, then I think you really have to medicate them. There's really no, in my experience, unless it's not truly idiopathic epilepsy, that you can treat them with diet or with homeopathic remedies. It just, I've never had success with that. But for example, if you have a dog that has a liver shunt, that can be treated. If it's an older dog, older dogs will get liver shunts from, for example, liver damage. So you can treat that by putting them on a low protein diet, and a lot of times that'll help. So that's not true epilepsy. That's a liver shunt. So as far as diet, some people believe that it's helpful to decrease the protein. In other words, use more fundamental amino acids and basic proteins as opposed to complex proteins. So it just takes, that's also beneficial for the liver in dogs that are on phenobarbital. So it doesn't really prevent the seizure, but it helps. It helps with the helps prevent the side effects of the phenobarbital. So diet is important, but it's not really number one. So you want, the main thing is to do no harm and to stop the seizure. That's the way I look at it.
Dr. Rugg, you and the whole team at Kingston Animal Hospital were so wonderful in Gibson's continuous care, including his laser treatments for his many hind end weakness issues, a side effect from his meds, and even in home care when he was unable to be transported. You were very, very receptive to adding alternative therapies, including supplements and laser treatments. And you and your team are just so caring and easy to talk with. And I always emphasize how important it is for families of EpiDogs to have a good, trusting relationship like that with their vets and to feel confident in their care. And I want to thank you so much for that. And in the end, for a lot of our listeners who don't know, Gibson did not pass from epilepsy. He did from cancer. His epilepsy was managed with his regimen, and he did live seizure-free for 7 years. Now, Dr. Rugg, I remember in the early days of Gibson's diagnosis, I was pretty nervous, and as such, it's natural to want to protect and overprotect your pet. But you and Dr. Alden advised me that while caring for him, to also be sure to let Gibson live his life, and that was such a key piece of advice for me, and I always really kept that uppermost in my mind. And boy, he did love life, and you know, he loved walking over here to your office and giving everybody all his Gibby kisses, and he was really a happy boy in between issues. And for him, we were able to keep him seizure-free 7 years. He had a lot of different side effects with the different things like the hindend weakness and vomiting and things like that that I've talked about previously on my show. And that really taught me a lot, and we forged such a great trusting bond. What other suggestions do you have for families who are suddenly are faced with a dog that starts having seizures?
I think it's important that that they read about epilepsy and in like in your shows or you know, in some of the newsletters or the podcasts that have podcasts mm-hmm. that describe it. Epilepsy in humans, for example, you know, you probably have people that you know and that are epileptic that you might not know they're epileptic. They're just normal and they have to take medication because of their condition. It's the same thing. You can't become overwhelmed by it. It's a treatable disease. The dogs need to be socialized and exercised and as much as possible as live a normal life. And in my, you know, over 40 years of experience, I've seen dogs live, you know, have great lives, and a lot of times not have any problems. A lot of times, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of times they will die. When they die, they're dying from something else altogether. It's not the epilepsy or the medication. They have something else happen, and it's not necessarily because of the idiopathic epilepsy. So that's sort of like a way to look at it. You just treat it like you would anything else. You know, if you become overburdened with worry, it's not going to be good for anybody. And the dogs, they are great. They just, it's not like necessarily a debilitating disease. They can do everything, you know, that a regular dog without epilepsy can do, you just with a couple of things that you have to be careful of, you know, like what they're eating, if they're on bromide or, you know, if they're, you know, in the beginning when you're adjusting the medications, you know, you have to sort of take it slow because there's going to be some slowing down of their normal behavior. They may be sleepier. They may get more tired. Once you get through that, they're normal, energetic pets. So you have to have a positive attitude about it. And that's what Dorothy always had. And I think it was just soaked in by Gibson, and he just had a great life.
Let's talk about post-seizure care. That's also very important. I know we gave Gibson some vanilla ice cream to help raise his sugar levels, a little water, a bit of protein, and protected him from anything that could pose a hazard as he experienced temporary blindness and disorientation. What other things should pet parents look out for after their pet has had a seizure?
I think the biggest thing is just sort of talking to them and reassuring them, because they're sort of, you know, they feel like they're worried, like they are before the seizure. After the seizure, it's like, you know, they must be having like visual, I imagine, like hallucinations, and they're confused. And I think that the presence of the owner, their favorite people being there, reassures them, and patting them or even massaging them and talking to them and being there for them is crucial. You know, not, you know, once you understand that the problem, you know, once you've accepted you're no longer in denial about the condition, then you, just like if it was your child, you just becomes part of your life, and that reassures them. And obviously they're incoordinated, and they're, you know, they have to be watched for physical harm they can do to themselves. And yes, you're right, they can become hypoglycemic, and their blood sugar can drop, so giving them a lot. Sometimes they're ravenous after they have a seizure, so giving them a little ice cream or some food is a good idea. to raise the blood sugar. Most of the time, if we do a blood sugar on a dog while it's having a seizure, the blood sugar is low. And sometimes there's like muscle release in which their muscles are sore. So, you know, helping them, you know, keeping them warm and massaging them and afterwards so they don't have a big drop in temperature. Just when they're hyperthermic and their temperature is too high, once the seizure is over, their body temperature could drop and they could theoretically go into shock. So keeping them warm until they're up and about and then watching them closely. But usually, most of the time, the post-seizure phase is, you know, is less than an hour. Occasionally, you'll have dogs that are sort of out of it for longer than that. And then if they have a cluster seizure, then you probably should take them to your veterinarian because you want to make sure that they're not going to slip into shock because of all of the changes that their body went through. But most of it is common sense. I think the biggest thing is reassuring them.
Just to step back just a little bit, I know when a dog is having a seizure, or sometimes even if you know the dog is going into a seizure, that sometimes they're, and I've done this with Gibson, but I know there's a certain group of people who think if you put cool packs on certain parts of their body, lower, like the lower neck, and I call it under the arms, but under their legs, maybe in the belly area. With Gibson, when he had his, of course, I didn't have any cool packs. I used frozen peas and a loaf of Italian bread, which kind of was a little joke for a while in the family because no one wanted to take anything out of my freezer. How effective is this, and are there key areas that people should apply it to?
Well, I had referred to the greyhound because what happens is the body temperature goes up, and that can cause damage to the organs, to the internal organs. So as far as whether it slows down the seizure or not, I think it lowers the body temperature, so it helps prevent secondary effects of the seizures. So, yeah, you can... you can use some ice packs if your dog is having a seizure, and you don't want him to. It's smart. A normal body temperature for a dog is about 101.5. So a lot of times when they're having a seizure, their body temperature will go up to 106, 107. So if you can get a rectal thermometer, you know, if you're unable to get him right to an emergency room, you don't want his temperature to drop too fast. So you don't want to make him like icy cold because then they'll go into shock. So if once the body temperature comes down like 2 degrees, remove it to like 104, 103.5, remove the ice packs, because what's going to happen is there's going to be more of a drop that you're not aware of, and then all of a sudden you'll have a whole new set of problems because of the cold. So backing up a little bit, if your dog is not having good seizure control, one of the things that you can do is have either Valium suppositories, or you can actually take oral Valium, crush it up, because Valium suppositories are astronomically expensive. But if you take oral or injectable Valium and you put it rectally, you inject it rectally, you're not really injecting it, you're just sort of giving it up the rectum, it can be absorbed, and that is a potent anti-seizure medication. So if your dog's having a seizure and it doesn't seem to be going through the usual 2 minute phase, you can give it rectal Valium, and that will sometimes prevent you from having to take the dog to the emergency room. And then you get them, you know, usually what we would do is sort of have the emergency room, or if it's during the day, we would talk you through it to to possibly increase the phenobarbital at that time orally once the dog comes out of the seizure. But I think it's a good idea to have that Valium on board.
Great. That's really excellent information. I talk a lot about, I know a lot of dog parents have first aid kits for their pets, and I always go a little bit more and say when you have an epi dog, there are certain things that you should keep in their first aid kit, such as that. So thank you. If you're just tuning in, this is a Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and we are talking with Dr. Arnold Rugg, Medical Director and owner of Kingston Animal Hospital in Kingston, New York. You can check out Kingston Animal Hospital staff services, pet health information, and videos over on their website at www.kingstonanimalhospital.com, as well as on their Facebook page of the same name. Links to these sites are also listed on our show's website at dogworksradio.com/the-5-5.com, and will be coming up soon in a blog post over on my 5sides.blogspot.com and on my 5sides Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews Facebook page. Also, please just check out the November 1st post over on 5sides blog, because I have some information on Epilepsy Awareness Month, as well as information on two clinical studies where they're holding a recruitment call for epi dogs, and that's through the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. So be sure to check both of them out. There's flyers over there you can download with information and contact numbers as well. Mine and Gibson's message always has been and always will be that dogs with canine epilepsy can and do live happy lives. And thanks to you, Dr. Rugg, and your wonderful, caring, knowledgeable staff, Gibson lived a happy life with the last 7 years seizure-free, which was just really great. And as we spoke earlier, you know, as you're going through it, you just go day by day, really hour by hour, day by day, and then that kind of turns into a week, into a month, and, you know, you just kind of, it's always there, uppermost, but then you just kind of get on with life. And then now, being on this side of it, I look back and I think 7 years is amazing, and thank you for all the wonderful care that, you know, you've given him. And I just wanted to ask that, like, with epilepsy, for any of our listeners, you know, who are caring for dogs with it, I thought maybe, you know, you might have some encouraging words for them, or, you know, what would you say to someone who's even considering adopting a dog that has epilepsy?
Yes, I think that looking back on all the epileptics that I've treated over the years, for the most part, they had great lives, and they lived. You have to realize that bigger dogs have shorter lifespans, sadly, and bigger dogs are more difficult to treat. But you know, they're so loving and they're so affectionate and they're so I like little dogs and big dogs, but there's something about having a big dog that, you know, that's, you know, it's worth $1 million. Right now, you know, is a great time, because so much is being learned and so much is being done in veterinary medicine. There are studies going on epilepsy. The neurologists are learning more. They're able to differentiate, different causes, and so now we have so many more weapons in our arsenal to treat the dogs that I wouldn't hesitate to suggest that you have an epileptic dog, and you as long as you understand that they have special needs, they can be regular great pets, and that's what it's all about. I mean, you know, they're parts of the family, you know, and it's just a wonderful experience. And also, when you have kids and the kids are exposed to a dog that has special needs, it's a learning experience for the whole family, and they can become much more open to all the human problems that we see, rather than just thinking of, you know, shutting out people that have issues or problems. They can learn from their pets, and then they can extend it to become better human beings. And I think that, you know, to us, you know, dogs and cats are just like furry people, mm-hmm. you know, and just part of what makes life wonderful.
That's wonderful. That is a fantastic message. Thank you so much. And I'm thrilled to have you on. I mean, you know, I love you guys, and, you know, you've taken such great care of not just Gibson, but, you know, all of our five sibes. But thank you so much, and I really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
Being here. Thanks.
It was fun.
I should just say thank you for everyone for tuning in to this very important, informative episode of the Sibe Vibe. You can also check us out on iTunes under the DogWorks Radio family of shows. This show and other shows will be listed there, so you can listen to us at your leisure by checking us out there, and also, of course, at the DogWorksRadio.com website, and check out the Sibe Vibe, and a list of all our episodes are on there as well. Next month, we're going to be featuring a special guest who's coming back to visit us, and it'll be Sherry Belair-Geron, also known as Mama Shay, and that's Buddy the Christmas Husky's foster mom. She'll be coming on, and we're going to be talking about how Buddy's doing today, and also about the road trip that they took this past summer from Georgia up here to the Hudson Valley, and they joined me for a book signing over in the Water Street Market area of New Paltz, where we were at the really terrific restaurant called The Parish. That was our host venue. And we had a really great time visiting, and we had people come to meet Buddy himself, who totally enjoyed the day, and a lot of people came from far corners of the state of New York, as well as from a couple other neighboring states, so it was a lot of fun, and Sherry and I will be talking about that, and I just want to remind folks that if you're looking for some gift ideas this holiday season, keep in mind my four books, of course, the 2 5 Sibes Tales that are illustrated children's books that actually, I think anyone of all ages would actually enjoy that. And that's What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy and Getting Healthy with Harley. Also, the Buddy the Christmas Husky, A True Holiday Miracle book, as well as my Epi Dog Tales, Heartfelt Stories About Amazing Dogs Living and Loving Life with Canine Epilepsy. Not only is it a book about 124 dogs from across the globe who lived with or are living with epilepsy and seizures, their stories, as well as being a really important resource book. I compiled a lot of different information and links there, so anyone else on this journey will have a resource to go to and get some information that they'll need to, learn about dogs and with epilepsy and living with dogs with epilepsy. Also, too, a portion of each of my books I do donate for either canine epilepsy organizations or to help huskies in need. So please do check that out over at ArcticHousePublishing.com, and that's ArcticHousePublishing.com. And there are links there to purchase the book as well as links over to Amazon.com where all four books are also available. I just want to take a second and tell everybody have a happy Thanksgiving who celebrate this month, and we'll see you back here in December, and we'll kick off the holidays with Buddy the Christmas Husky. Thanks again, and have a great day.